Welcome to the Principled Podcast, brought to you by LRN. The Principled Podcast brings together the collective wisdom on ethics, business and compliance, transformative stories of leadership, and inspiring workplace culture. Listen in to discover valuable strategies from our community of business leaders and workplace changemakers.
Welcome to Principled. Today, we have Jennifer Farthing with us here. Jennifer, how are you doing?
Fine. Thanks, Marcia. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. So I wanted to invite you to join the Principled podcast to share a little bit about the trends in learning technology, and how that really intersects in the compliance and ethics field. So tell us a little bit about just kind of your background. Like, how did you get into learning technologies?
I guess that's a little bit of a long story to make short. So I spent about the 20 or so years prior to LRN working in the publishing field. And most of that time was spent in nonfiction educational publishing, helping folks at various levels, stages of life, students, adult learners, get from point A to point B. And slowly but surely, I started getting into more of the learning sector. And then there was the digital revolution. So instead of working on books, I was suddenly working on ebooks and apps and all kinds of digital interfaces. But it remained true that most of the readers that I was working with were trying to get from point A to point B. At the same time, the career of instructional design really exploded, and instructional designers were part of the team that created those learning materials. So as I started managing instructional designers alongside of the rest of the content creation group, I got really fascinated in what's the theory behind that, what makes a great instructional designer better than just a good one. So I ended up studying that. As a lifelong learner myself, I decided to get a certification in instructional design.
Oh, fantastic.
The next thing I knew, that was about half of a master's of science in education. So I decided to go all the way with that. And just like that, a learning professional was born or reborn.
Tell me, from the seat that you're in and the lens that you have into the industry, what are some of the adult learning best practices that you're really seeing grow in terms of adoption and impact?
Well, you're right, Marcia. It was quite an undertaking, and the possibilities are endless. But how do you actually operationalize that? How do you really get it done and work with these large multinational companies in helping them train their workforce at the click of a button? Because sometimes it seems like that should be done in a flash. And it's more complicated than that. Truly, one size does not fit all, but the short solution is let's just train everybody just like that. So the biggest challenge that we have is how do we train from everyone from just walking in the door, brand new member of the workforce at the company, to the lifelong veteran on the shop floor, that person who's been in the office down the hall for 10 years, all the way up to the C-suite. How do we train them? And the answer is we really can't give them all the same size, the same learning. One size does not fit all, as much as we'd like it to be. So for us to try and engage that kind of broad audience internationally is difficult, but we've come up with some really great ways to make that training meaningful for everybody.
Do you feel that there is a shift in how companies are more likely to adopt a blended strategy to consider, hey, you know, this audience segment would probably derive better retention or impact from this delivery mechanism versus this aspect of the workforce? Do you see?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, Marcia. And the truth is there's many ways that that we see companies do that. And it goes back to more of a conversation behind that. When they're feeling, how do we do this? They often look to us at LRN as their partner to figure out how they're going to go about leveraging our information, our knowledge, our skills, our expertise, and meet everyone where they live. And that's no small task, as you know. So what works for one department, one region, one role may not work for another. But the truth is there's economies of scale, there's efficiency, and there's efficacy. And how do you get all those into one package? Mm-hmm. So we do recommend a blended approach, which not everyone is able to take advantage of. But we know that when we spend time gathering information and learning, that is time best spent alone. If mm-hmm. we can't be together for all the learning, then when we have time together, the best way to spend that time is with discourse. Mm-hmm. So you may know this as the flipped classroom. We can take those principles with us in ethics and compliance training where you are invited to learn. Maybe there's a convening event where you find out what you're going to be spending your time doing ethics and compliance training on. And then the second step of that is, hey, learn on your own. The third step in a best practice would be to come together and talk about mm-hmm. it. Maybe that's at your next weekly staff meeting. Maybe it's a quarterly meeting. Perhaps it's coming together for a convening event, whatever that is, to help that information stick and be applied eventually is let's talk about it in person. And then again, in a perfect setting, let's follow on that learning with another piece. That can be in person, that can be online, that can be as simple as sending an email out, that can be a poster in the cafeteria, it can be an infographic, it can be a video.
Mm-hmm. So how much does communicating that consistent message and then contextualizing it really drive impact?
Our ethics and compliance learning typically is sold through stories. So what I mean by that is, in order to make it relevant, we first start by talking about the regulation. Why do we have this regulation? And then we start to unpack that in layperson's terms. This is how we get at our story. Why do we have rules against bribery? Because it's wrong. It's not the right thing to do. Anybody knows that. Our e-learning isn't about proving that it's right or wrong. We already know this. So when we come to creating our learning content, we tell stories about it. And it's proven that adults, like everybody else, really understand and learn and relate through stories. So the more relatable the content, the more sticky it is. The more sticky it is, the better the outcome. Just before I joined you, I asked one of our colleagues in the finance department what she liked about our e-learning. And after we had a few laughs, what she ended up telling me that is most impressive to her about LRN's e-learning is the fact that she can relate to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is what makes it, you know, studies have shown that's what makes it measurable. That's what makes it sticky. That's why we're doing what we're doing. So stories sell, stories tell.
Storytelling is, I would say, one of the number one attributes of real efficacy because it starts to take a complex situation and makes it not only relatable and contextual, but it sort of humanizes the situation. And, you know, I can say kind of from my experience working with organizations that a gap in the business is often around not really extending the trust for the workforce to feel comfortable to make the wrong decision. You know, not every mm-hmm. wrong decision is a catastrophic decision. And practice making decisions. So kind of getting into that sandbox and saying, hey, I'm going to just jump on the swing and fall off. I'm going to get on the slide and slide down and fall off. And if we as a business or a series of businesses present scenarios that take policy and contextualize them and then allow individuals to work as teams to recognize the risks and to practice discussing the options and applying the policy and making maybe not the best choice.
That's where learning happens.
That's where the learning happens.
That's exactly right. And when we talk about these stories, we really try and load them up and make them complicated and also add gray areas. And that's not window dressing.
Mm-hmm.
That's because when it comes to analyzing the story and answering the questions, doing the learning activities about it, there are decent choices in there. But there's one choice that's the best choice, that's the right thing to do, that is the ethical decision. So we do help them practice, and it's a safe space to practice. You practice on the page. You can do that independently with e-learning, or as you said, you can do it in small teams. But even when you do it on your own, it gives you something to talk about and connect with when you're doing that as a campaign at work. So the learning happens more often than not when you choose an okay answer, and then you find out why it's not the best one. Mm-hmm. How could you take that to the next level? And that's what really makes learning stick as well. It's reinforcing what helps you get from okay to really good to great. And that's really what this is about, because it can be done in private. It can be shared around the office. And we have the opportunity socially to reinforce that together when we're all engaging in the same campaign. So workforce training offers our partners a really unique opportunity to cement that message, because the more relatable the story, the more that you're going to hear people talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As you kind of echo the sentiment around the importance of the communication aspect of training. So there's training, and then there's how are we really having conversations and a dialogue in the organization. What role does leadership, or conventionally we hear the phrase tone in the middle, leading from the middle, how important is that in today's realm of really driving impact around, you know, training effectiveness and the compliance and ethics program as a whole?
Well, it's super important. And what we do know is that sometimes that tone at the top, that person at the top, the C-suite, whoever you're looking to as ultimate leadership, that person is usually a little bit out of touch.
They're just not on the ground walking the corridors every day.
They're not walking.
And it's understandable.
They're invisible in some ways. So what they see and what they get their cues from is their supervisor, that person's supervisor, and the everyday people that they see at work, their peers. Anyone these days can be a role model, can be a leader, and that is somebody that the workforce is generally going to take their cues from. So what we're seeing a lot of is empowering those people that are walking the talk, that are delivering that ethical message. We're seeing compliance departments reaching out to them and connecting and acknowledging them as ethics and compliance ambassadors. You don't have to be a member of the compliance department to be walking the talk and helping your peers learn.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to a company earlier this afternoon, and she was saying that compliance is the guardrails, but culture is how they get things done. So we've worked with a lot of organizations that have dealt with crises and scandals. We certainly know that one of the big headlines right now is a number of companies that are dealing with scandals and reputational situations as an outcome of Me Too. And we also know that there's a new wave of statewide regulations around anti-harassment training. As a practitioner in education, learning, and with your expertise operating in compliance and ethics space, really, my question is, how can a company devise an anti-harassment training and communication strategy that doesn't drive fatigue and can really have impact? How can they deliver and execute on this in a meaningful and a human way?
Well, it is a tall order, because number one, the leadership, ethics and compliance departments and teams, they're struggling with all of this new information. It's cognitive overload in and of itself. How do I unpack what state, regional, global, jurisdictional sexual harassment prevention training requirements even are? Mm-hmm. Step one. Step two, how do I find the time to do anti-harassment training within the curriculum that I have in ethics and compliance, as well as competing with all the other training that's going on at the organization? There's a lot of competition these days for the learner, that seat time, if you will. So combating and getting space on the company training calendar is one thing, but then combating the learner fatigue for this is quite another. What we've both seen in the past year, Marcia, as we've been out on the road talking about this, is taking the confusion, what do I do, to the practical, how do I do it? How mm-hmm. do I land this? How do I make this meaningful? And really what we've been advising our partners and engaging in a lot of conversations about is the authenticity of the training. We've talked about the erosion of trust in the workplace, the need for respect in the workplace. So coming to terms with all of that has been quite an undertaking. And what we saw is a strong desire to get on board and do the right thing, but then a little bit of a stall or a hesitation. I want to be sure I nail this. I want to be sure that I actually do the right thing. So we saw a lot of interest and we've seen a lot of adoption with our e-learning and our live training on sexual harassment prevention. But at the same time, there's a little bit of anxiety around, am I doing it right? Do I know what this is? And we're reading about this in the news every day, too, all of these stories. I didn't know that was sexual harassment. What is sexual harassment? So for the curriculum, it involves a lot of things. And it goes back to behavioral norms at the organization, taking cues from the climate and culture at work. Also, speaking to your constituents on, you know, hey, we have a zero tolerance for this kind of behavior, and taking a step back into not just sexual harassment, but what do we think about harassment? What is the role of the bystander? What is the role of the supervisor? What is the role of any ethical human being in the face of something happening at work that's disrespectful?
Jennifer, it has been a pleasure having you join our principled afternoon and our chat today on learning trends in the compliance and ethics industry. And I hope that you will join us again.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. The Principled Podcast is brought to you by LRN. At LRN, our mission is to inspire principled performance in global organizations by helping them foster winning, ethical cultures rooted in sustainable values. Please visit us at LRN.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave us a review.